Don't Leave That Dial, 96.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz. Yes, you're tuned to the community radio station in Santa Cruz. The one station where they'll actually put you on the air without charging you a commercial or chopping off your message. Stay tuned for the next 2 hours and join me on the air on Bathurst Pier's Broadsides, Homeless and Civil Rights for Poor People and just plain ordinary people everywhere, particularly focusing on those who are on the streets, outside, or vulnerable. Call-in number, if you want to join us for the next 2 hours, is 427-3772. We're going to be covering a whole panoply of things, so stick with us.
Rockefeller, Campanella, Communist Bloc, Roy Cohn, War Perone, Toscanini, Dacron, Gin, Gin, Foo Falls, Rock Around the Clock, Einstein, James Dean, Brooklyn's Got a Winning Team, Davy Crockett, Peter Pan, Elvis Presley, Disneyland, Bardo, Budapest, Alabama, Khrushchev, Prince's Great, Katy Perry, Trouble in the Suez.
We didn't start the fire.
Start the fire, but we're stuck in the middle of it. Let's make sure we don't get caught in the feedback here at the studio, and I guess they're out there on the radio, Next Year Radio. I'm Robert Norris. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz and your two-hour show, also my two-hour show, let's say all of our two-hour show, and you can show up if you want, at least voice-wise, by giving us a call at 427-3772. In fact, we're hoping that some folks are going to call in. About 3 or 4 weeks ago, Community Action Board, CAB, had a great meeting where a lot of folks spoke up about just how wretched and difficult it is to be poor in Santa Cruz County, and yet how you can triumph over those odds, and what you need to do, and what also needs to be done by people getting together who are poor to deal with the basic bad conditions that have actually gotten worse in many ways. We're hoping that Deborah is going to call in. And Deborah, if you hear this show and you've got your radio tuned in, please give us a call at 427-3772. Until we get our call-ins, and this includes anybody, if you're interested in what we're talking about, and that ranges from the rights of people outside, homeless people, problems concerning police abuse, well, you'll be able to pick up on what we're talking about. Please do call in, because we want to hear from you. You are what make the show a vital reality. Today in the mail, I got a memorandum from Councilmember Chris Crone, addressed to Police Chief Steve Belcher, dated June 10th. And Councilmember Crone's memorandum, the subject heading is Beatings of Homeless Men. I'm going to read you his memorandum. There is alarm in our community concerning the possibility of systematic planned beatings of homeless people. Possibility? Thanks, Chris. There have been at least 3 credible reported incidences of beatings of homeless men in the past month involving the following individuals. 1, June 9, 1999, Ray Stitt, reported to Officer G. Hernandez. May 13, 1999, Ted Rahmer, and May 8, 1999, Joe Barker, Ron Watson, and James Budd. Please issue an FYI, that's a for your information statement, regarding the results of the investigations of these alarming incidences. Is there any perceived pattern to these beatings? Has any individual or individuals been charged yet in any of the beating cases? Thank you very much for your immediate attention to this matter, Christopher Crone. Copies to Mayor and Council Members Ken Cole, Homeless Resource Center, Mae Wong, Sentinel, Robert Norris, Huff. First memorandum I've gotten from Chris Crone. Well, I also heard, I guess, that Chris had written a nasty email to Police Chief Steve Belcher. And if this is the nasty email, well, it's relatively mild, I've got to say. I'm glad that Christopher Crone is pressing Steve Belcher for information about beatings, but of course the real question is, what about solutions for the rest of the people who are in fear of being beaten, who have to hide their campsites at night, can't sleep together in large groups for fear of being ticketed or hassled by police, or getting picked up on old sleeping ban warrants that are still out there, since half of sleeping ban tickets have gone to warrant, generally speaking, if we look at the stats for the last few years, and those are hundreds of tickets and hundreds of warrants out there looking for people just to put them in jail, not for the night, by the way, so you have a comfortable evening and a bed, but until about 2 or 3 in the morning when they release you OR into the night, freezing cold. So the question for Christopher Crone is not can he write a nasty, or even a, not even a can he write a nasty letter to Chief Belcher, he obviously can't, this is not a nasty letter, it's an inquiry, is can he organize and speak up for the need for emergency shelter now? I spoke to Ken Cole, head of the Homeless Resource Center, actually Homeless Services Center, and Cole told me this morning that for the last week about 2 people have been turned away every night. And that's better than 7 people that were turned away a couple weeks ago. But of course the real figure, as Cole confided, is much higher. People just get discouraged and don't come. And so you have literally dozens, scores, in fact, if you want to look at the full stats, hundreds of people who are outside subject to the illegal status which the sleeping ban, the city's municipal code, puts them under after 11 o'clock at night. And equally important, and as a function of the sleeping ban, they are also subjected to the danger of beating and conceivably killing by these thugs who are still unidentified. They're uncaptured, they're unprosecuted, they're unarrested. They're out there. And Crone is writing a letter to the police chief saying, gosh, here are 3 instances, which the chief already knows about, because the 3 instances that Crone cites all came from police reports. He didn't go out and do any original research. He didn't call a meeting of homeless people and ask who'd been beaten up and how can I help you. He didn't march out to the Homeless Services Center like the rest of us did, seeking to get people to get together and what can we do to stop this and how can I help. No, this is an edict from on high from our council member Crone, which is a sort of a, I guess in a way he's bombing his own conscience. You know, he's saying, look, I'm doing something about this. Well, he's not. Because to do something about it means by tomorrow, or actually probably by tonight, having put on the agenda an item about emergency shelter and a safety zone, something that we have been urging him to do month after month, week after week, council meeting after council meeting, to no avail. Crone has hidden behind the skirts of, well, he said, we don't have the votes, so what's the point? And as anyone can tell him, the point, even if you don't have the votes, is to raise the issue clearly and publicly so that you get the votes. And so people like the gutless Catherine Byers, our mayor, who held hearings on the sleeping ban for 3 months and then just unilaterally declared there would be no substantive change in it without even considering the issue in any real way, is forced to hear the message. Because when the public begins to speak, the politicians have no choice but to listen eventually, because the windows start to get rocked, so to speak. The screams of the street begin to reach into the cultured conversation and the pleasant dining hall areas where those who aren't on the streets gather. But unfortunately, our council member Crone hasn't gone to homeless people and has no plans, as far as I know, to proceed with any kind of a proposal for an emergency shelter. far as he's concerned, it's okay to leave homeless women out there defenseless night after night. And you might say, well, isn't that unfair? Wasn't he one of the two council members, Crone and Sugar, who voted for real changes in the sleeping ban? Yes, he was. And for that, he is to be credited. But that was 3 or 4 months ago. That was on those occasions when the issue came up at City Council. Throughout the rest of the entire time, he has kept a low profile. He's kept his head ducked low. He has not championed any real change. He's not stood up for these people who have been beaten up. What he needs to do is he needs to call a press conference with these people with him right by his side, saying these men have been beaten up and there are no suspects in custody. Oh, yes, we've been told there are investigations by the police chief. Thank you very much. That's fine. Let the police chief investigate all he wants to. What we need to do is protect the rest of the people outside, including these people tonight, by setting up some kind of safety zone, opening up a carport, which are empty at night, the garages, the parking garages downtown, opening up a park at night. Nobody uses the park. You're not allowed to. It's illegal to be in a park after dusk. You go into a park after dusk, you get a ticket. Setting up a safe zone, possibly in the Pogonet, possibly out at Harvey West. Again, an emergency safe zone for the period of time that this emergency continues as far as the threats against homeless people. And it's not just happening in this city. The threats are happening elsewhere. But the difference, for example, in San Francisco, and I spoke to the Coalition on Homelessness today, there was a very nasty flyer which was put out, and unfortunately I don't have it with me. Maybe my producer can get me a copy of it, threatening the lives of homeless people as of July 1st, saying that they're tired of having all these homeless people downtown in the Market Street, UN Plaza area. They're going to start shooting people because they don't like the smell of urine and the thought of feces in the area. They're going to whip out their guns. This is in San Francisco. Well, in Santa Cruz, of course, they don't make those kinds of threats in quite the same way. They just go out and beat people up. And the police do their job by threatening homeless people sort of off to the side. I got a call 2 days ago about Officer Seeley threatening a homeless man for walking between the homeless service center and Bean's Cafe, which is a little cafe about a block away. He walked through a private area, which it's technically private property, but it's used by everybody. I've used it. I see people using it all the time. Harassed this guy by his report. Then, as he walked away, called him back, said, "Hey, you forgot your beer," and held up a can of carburetor fluid. I think this shows us, if this story is accurate, where Officer Seeley is, and I certainly hope that it's not the case. Maybe he can call in and deny it, or possibly one of his friends can deny it, or possibly we'll be doing what we really need to do, which is not sit around waiting for the Citizens Police Review Board to play patty cake with the City Council and soothe the sensibilities of its most reactionary members after somebody has been abused by the police, after police have targeted protesters with children, after police have provoked a near riot, as they did on May 22nd. We don't need to go back to a Citizens Police Review Board, I think. Or perhaps we need to, but it's a horribly pathetic kind of forum to be operating in. We need to set up our own forum, such as the Community Tribunal is working on in San Jose. We're going to hopefully be hearing more about this in the next 2 hours. A forum where people actually can come to present their concerns publicly, and they can have them heard and understood by others in the community who have had similar experiences, and they can, through their testimony, give courage to those who are afraid to speak. And that's maybe what we really need for this fellow who was threatened by Officer Seeley, at least claims he was threatened by Officer Seeley 2 days ago. He claimed he then went to Community House, which is the Cadillac Project, which supplanted the homeless campground out there, and does provide some transition programs and beds for the lucky few. Tried to visit someone and was stopped by the same Officer Seeley. And he then, of course, went and filed complaints with the head of the Homeless Services Center and spoke to me about it. But this is the cop that's supposed to be protecting the people outside. He was the officer that sat between Sergeant Baker and Sergeant Clark at a recent meeting at the Homeless Services Center and assured the homeless population that he would protect their campsites if they told him where their campsites were. It's a really chilling situation. One can imagine how Serbs are feeling in Kosovo right now, or possibly how some Albanians felt a month ago in Kosovo. It's grim to be in that kind of situation. Well, you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3. It's not all grim. Let's take a blast from the past with the mamas and the papas and take a breather. One of my old favorites from the Mamas and the Papas. Boy, mid-60s, very harmonic, very melodic, nice tonic to the kind of stuff that unfortunately that I have to talk about because it's happening and it's something we have to know about. Just got a reply from the Sheriff's Internal Affairs Department dated June 15th to a complaint I made. It's the kind of form that the police chief used to send back to me in the city before the Citizens Police Review Board prompted them to kind of do a more personalized way of saying fuck off to those who file complaints. This is a form that says, Dear Mr. Norse, in accordance with the California Penal Code Section 832.7D, your complaint has been received and reviewed. The investigation of your complaint has resulted in an exonerated finding against the officer involved. There are four classifications that the police department can give any complaint. The one you want to get if you're filing a complaint is sustained, which means they believe your complaint has merit and they are essentially crediting it. Second is unsustained, which means not quite enough evidence. The officer has more evidence that your complaint is not accurate or doesn't cover it. Then there's exonerated, which I just got, which is even further down the road, claiming that the complaint is less than accurate or not based in reality or not the basis of a real concern for the police department regarding the officer. And finally, there's unfounded, which means that you kind of made it up. So I got this back. This is a complaint about behavior by deputies at the metal detector in the court building. And probably those of you who are listening know about this, although perhaps some of you may not. When you go into the county court building for any kind of a hearing or to observe a proceeding or to look for someone who's observing a proceeding, you will have to pass through a metal detector. And it's not because there have actually been bombs or guns really found in the courthouse area, that this is there. This is a form of police state hysteria that kind of has come in the last few years, ties everybody up, subjects everybody to these sort of humiliating and obnoxious searches by deputies who have better things to do. And I guess on this occasion, I went through and I had some buttons, political pins on my shirt, and I went through and they beeped, and I turned to the deputy who had a, what you call a handheld metal detector in his hand. I said, well, why don't you just run the metal detector over my shirt and you'll see that that's the only problem that I have of these two buttons, and you can, he said, nope, you have to go back and take them off. And I said, why? You know, you've been running this detector over other people's areas to see if they're, once they beep, you know, that beep meaning there's metal as you walk through the detector, why can't you do it with me and indicate that the rest of my body doesn't have any metal on it? You'll have to go back or you'll have to leave. You know, he went through this series of threats. And eventually we got into kind of a sharp and rather loud exchange about the issue, which hopefully educated a few people in the area and embarrassed the deputies who were doing this kind of shit every day, because they were indeed being discriminatory and they had no reason to do this other than to assert their authority kind of capriciously, which they have more than enough chance to do at other times, and I don't think they need to do it here. It's demeaning enough to be in this process where you somehow have to prove you're not a criminal as you walk into the court. You get your private spaces searched and your private property searched, essentially for no reason, essentially based on some sort of paranoid police state notions, in my view. Of course, you might want to call in on that. Maybe you feel that these searches at the courthouse are a good thing, and of course, please express your views on that if you do. Phone number here is 427-3772. 427-3772, and you are tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz at 96.3 FM, in case you've forgotten or didn't know. Anyway, so I filed a complaint against the sheriff involved for essentially being rude and arbitrary in his process and declining to call the lieutenant, because that's what I wanted him to do, to bring some a superior over to discuss the situation. And I got back this form. The only thing I can say that's positive about this form is that it came back within a month. Past complaints have taken over a year to get any form back or been completely ignored. So I suppose we could consider this a form of progress of a sort. So that's progress Santa Cruz style. Here's an announcement. Coming up on Saturday, we have an event at 1 p.m. June 19th at the Loudon Nelson Community Center. That's at the corner of Laurel and Washington in Santa Cruz. The Frank Little Club is throwing an event. And here's the dope, class warriors, anti-war activists, Mumia soldiers, social justice fighters are all invited to attend the maiden voyage of the Santa Cruz Frank Little Caucus of the Peace and Freedom Party. And there's some slogans on this. An injury to one is an injury to all. Rise up, Peace and Freedom Party, stop the execution of Mumia Abu-Jamal. I don't see the sleeping ban on here, but I'm sure that they simply omitted it. Since the IWW, which I think is a lot of the same people who are in the Frank Little, the Peace and Freedom Party are involved with the IWW, or some many are sympathetic to both groups. The IWW held its 1994 convention in Santa Cruz on the streets and slept here in solidarity with homeless people suffering under the sleeping ban. And of course, they're still suffering. They're just suffering bruises and cuts, abrasions and fractured ribs now, as well as the kind of condescension and political posturing that Christopher Crone is doing with these kinds of notes to Chief Belcher instead of taking real action at City Council. Crone, by the way, usually has a meeting every Monday before the City Council meeting. And since there's a City Council meeting on Tuesday coming up, I guess that's Tuesday, let's see, Tuesday the 22nd, that'll be on Monday the 21st at 6 p.m. at the Cafe Pergolesi. Crone will presumably be having his kind of a regal get-together with people. And I encourage people to go and tell him just what they think of his silence on the issue of homeless beatings as far as any solutions goes. The other thing you can do is you can call Crone at 420-5020, and that's the City Council hotline, and they'll give you an extension number to get to. Give him a call, 420-5023 is his direct line into City Council. You can reach him there, and you can leave him a message even now. Say, please, do something immediate about this. Put something on the agenda. Actually, please really isn't the right way to do it. You should say it's damn well overdue that you did something about this. Posturing with Chief Belcher is not the way to go. And I hope that It's actually buyers that needs to do this, because the minute buyers speaks, everybody perks up their ears in the world of Santa Cruz City Council politics. She's the mayor, so everybody listens to her. She's the one who defeated any reform of the sleeping ban, and she's the one who essentially is to be held responsible for any brutality or violence that happens against homeless people outside because of their vulnerability and because of the failure of the city to protect them. I mean, I think she's the one who should be subjected to a lawsuit if this happens. But of course, I'm fantasizing. Anyway, I'm dropping back to this event on the 19th. It's coming up on Saturday, 1 to 4. Loudon Nelson, George Cadman, key Mumia activist, is going to be speaking on Mumia Abu-Jamal, Steve Argue, the anti-war activist and homeless street spirit vendor who was targeted with police repression both on May 22nd and at other times. We'll speak on capitalist imperialist occupation of the Balkans. Lest we forget, NATO is moving into Yugoslavia as we speak, and the Serbs are moving out of Kosovo, and the KLA, the Albanian guerrilla organization, is moving in. Unfortunately, the KLA is rather strange organization. It can't decide whether it's a fascist group in favor of Greater Albania or a communist group in favor of radical reform. I'm not quite sure what they're doing. Gerald Sanders, former Black Panther and Frank Little caucus leader, will speak on revolutionary socialism, the alternative to capitalist barbarism. And Frank Running Horse, former student body president and Frank Little street organizer, will speak on revolutionary strategy for the 21st century. So it sounds like it's Revolutionary City at the Saturday Forum, Loudon Nelson Center, 1 to 4. And it looks like it's free. And if you want information, you can give a call. There isn't a local number, unfortunately, but give a call to 423-HUFF if you have any questions, and I'll try to hook you up. Well, I was so moved by that last song that I'm going to play you another Mama's and Papa's number. So hang tough and stay with us here on Free Radio.
Hurry and die.
Mamas and Papas. Here's an interesting story from Jacksonville, Florida. Arrest for those who don't go to homeless campground. Jacksonville may soon have a law directing police to arrest homeless people who refuse to go to a shelter or use a new outdoor sleeping area that could be created downtown. But the proposal, 2 years in the works, would only be enforced if some private shelter in the city agrees to run and manage the outdoor camp. The proposal from Councilmember Howard Dale represents his latest attempt to balance humanitarian concerns for people living on the street with long-standing complaints from business owners and residents about the nuisance behaviors of some homeless individuals. Jacksonville's homeless population hovers around 3,000 and sometimes outpaces the availability of shelter beds. This is a story from the Times Union by Karen Rivadal from June 4th. Before I go on with it, though, let me comment that Florida, of course, is substantially ahead of Santa Cruz and much of California because an enlightened judge, Clyde Atkins, back in 1992, found in the infamous, or I should say the famous, Pottinger case, infamous for the city but glorious for those on the street, that it is, the city cannot criminalize so-called life-sustaining behavior like covering up with blankets, sleeping, fire in a park, things of that sort. If there is no legal place for people to go and sleep. And this decision resulted in, and it was actually a decision that only affected Dade County in Miami, but it frightened other counties in Florida into setting up campgrounds, downtown sleeping zones for homeless people. And there's a lot of concern and criticism that these were inadequate, that they were limited, they were simply a pretext that allowed the city to close the parks at night without legal liability, because if they didn't have a sleeping zone, then homeless people could sleep in the parks and challenge tickets, they feared, because of the Atkins-Pottinger decision. But so they were way ahead of us in that regard. They had established the principle that you cannot arrest someone for sleeping unless there's a legal place for them to sleep. Now in Jacksonville, this story has reached us that there's a proposal for a homeless campground, and this is the kind of more advanced controversy going on around it that I guess we'll be talking about once we can get benighted liberals like Catherine Byers to actually stand up and support basic human rights for poor people, such as the right to sleep somewhere. That has already kind of been established in Florida in the sense that it has become a part of the dialogue. It has become a kind of accepted. There's still harassment of homeless people, don't get me wrong. It's happening everywhere in the country, but they have to kind of pay lip service and kowtow to and show some tribute to this basic principle that you don't arrest someone unless there's a shelter bed. Dale's bill, which comes up for a final vote Tuesday, would require police to arrest people who loiter on public or private property after one warning. Hang on, let's pause in reading this because we have an incoming call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Is this Radical Robert?
It is indeed. This sounds like Foolish Phil.
Yes, you got me again. Yes, I'm here to extemporize on any subject of your choice.
Okay, well, we will accept your incoming call here, Phil, even though you're interrupting a vital story from Florida.
Well, I'll be happy to call back.
No, I'm glad we've got you, and we tend to give a priority to calls, plus we have a mystery guest who's just arrived in the studio. She was with us a year ago, and I'm going to see if we can put her on the other mic. She can maybe comment on some of this stuff. She's been homeless different times in her life. Not quite sure if she's homeless at the moment. No, she's shaking her head no, but she was homeless. And she's also been the subject of some pretty hefty abuse by Seaside Company guards. She was on my show a year ago talking about how if you talk about the Ku Klux Klan in an unfavorable light, you may find yourself escorted off the property.
Prejudice against the Ku Klux Klan?
Well, you know,
dastardly to me.
Well, and she is, I've got to put it this way, she is considerably darker of hue than I am, I got to tell you.
This is
one beautiful woman. So I'm going to invite Wanda to kind of sit in on this conversation. She's already sitting in. If you want, Wanda, you can just relax where you are. You can move to the other mic, which is over there, and we'll see if we can have you join the conversation. You can hear on the speaker? Okay, good. I don't know. Have you got a radio, Phil? You probably haven't.
No, I don't. I can barely hear her. Hello, Wanda.
Hi.
All right.
Okay.
So, I think you...
Well, we'll probably have to do it kind of me to you and then me to Wanda, but we'll see.
Okie doke.
Well, Phil, you, of course, are an activist with the Beach Flats Residents Association.
Neighborhood Association.
Beach Flats Neighborhood Association.
Yes.
As well as a luminary in the Beach Area Working Group, which I think did such a good job in giving stats and publicizing the realities of the Seaside Company last fall, and elected a whole new crop of council members. And aren't you happy you did that?
Relative to the alternatives, yes.
Mm-hmm. So I know that I saw you last night coming out of a SCAN Housing Committee meeting, and you were not happy.
Well, no. As I later looked at the amended resolution, I was less unhappy, but at the time it had a unpleasant feel to it.
Now let's kind of go back a step so that people who don't know what we're talking about, and that's probably everybody but you, me, and certainly Wanda looks a little puzzled over there. The issue here is the Dolphin Lee project, which is, of course, two apartment complexes in the Beach Flats, not too far from where you live, that have, what, 200 residents at the moment?
Approximately.
And these are the target of some housing, low-income housing, or affordable income, sort of not too low-income housing advocates who are talking about just dumping all these people out on their butts with a little bit of money to kind of put them on the road, and then raising the place and putting in some new housing on top of this, and then sort of a housing project a la inner city housing projects that have proved so successful in the large cities that they're now being abandoned in droves.
Yes.
And they're doing all this without any real communication input or call from the Beach Flats neighborhood. Plus,
well, not quite accurate. The Beach Flats neighborhood has fairly clearly expressed their displeasure and are essentially being ignored.
So in other words, they're having a little, what part of get the fuck out, don't
yes.
you understand, that sort of
exactly.
thing?
Exactly.
So they are in essence saying, we're going to help you whether you like it or not.
Yes.
We're going to help you out, way out, that sort of thing.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Using our superior educations and ethnic and cultural insights to determine for you what is best for you.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that in response to this, you, Jane Bear, and others concerned about this have recently been kind of bending the ear of council member Chris Crone, trying to get him to get a bead on what's going on. You've contacted Tim Fitzmaurice. I think you probably even tried to talk to our vice mayor, Keith Sugar. And you've also evolved a plan called the Rex Court Plan, which sort of as an alternative seeking low-income housing proposes that the money that would be spent in all these costly relocation fees for the Dolphin Lee project instead be expended in buying property and houses from Charlie Canfield, where he essentially bought a lot of houses and either demolished them or evicted everybody, hoping for a speculative boon from the city in the infamous Third Street realignment project that unfortunately fell on its ass, or I should say fortunately fell on its ass. And your proposed alternative, as I like to put in my partisan way, this Rex Court project, is to actually expand housing stock. Instead of destroying Dolphin Lee, you would keep Dolphin Lee and expand the amount of housing available by building on vacant Seaside Company property, with perhaps using Habitat for Humanity. You would also do some fixing up, rehabilitating of those abandoned houses that perhaps are not all they could be, that were previously residential but were then purchased by Seaside with everybody evicted. Do I understand that properly?
Yes. Yes.
And
the point being to stop this commercial speculation, this buy, vacate, demolish Seaside Company practice that has, within the last 20 years since we've been here, eliminated a full 25% of the neighborhood, the housing stock and the physical size of the neighborhood. The neighborhood we've watched shrink by a good 25-30% through exactly that process. If it isn't stopped in some kind of manner, there's nothing else to do.
Well, I know you made a resolution on CAB last night, and I know you sit on the board of directors of the Community Action Board, and at their board meeting you requested them to look into city council, to ask city council to look into the, you asked CAB to ask city council to look into the question of speculation by the Seaside Company, or ask them to condemn the destruction of residential property for commercial purposes. And I know you narrowly lost that vote, and in fact some of the people who favored that vote wanted something a little more specific.
Yes, I probably rushed into that without getting the wording correct in terms of a supportable resolution. I will take it back and rework it, and
I think
get a yay vote.
Well, I think the point was you had the votes, and you have the votes for those. I think people said that they would vote for a proposal that in essence said we ask the city council to authorize a study that determines just how much property has been destroyed, how much residential housing has been destroyed in the last decade by the
right. We've come to realize that we were sort of assuming that what has happened was general knowledge, when in fact apparently a lot of people in other parts of the city are pretty unaware of it. So we have to kind of alert the public to the fact that a neighborhood is being eaten alive, and hopefully there will be some sort of a response.
Now, Andy Schifrin, aide to Marty Wormhout, a sort of a SCAN insider, came forward with this Dolphin Lee proposal at the SCAN Housing Committee meeting, and I was sort of at the tail end of the last Housing Committee meeting, and then last night I attended most of the, well, certainly some of the Housing Committee meeting. And Andy Schifrin had a proposal that he was pressing, which essentially asked the city council to, well, he had some general, I think, form about we condemn commercial, you know, speculation, something of that effect.
Yes, that was added in response to the earlier meeting, essentially in response to the concerns that we expressed. And I thought he added that in a strong and significant way.
Really?
You know,
I thought it was vague gobbledygook myself.
Well, it says, take whatever steps it can to oppose the continued acquisition of housing units by the Seaside Company, with the subsequent displacement of the low-income residents and demolition of the units.
And what could such steps be? I notice there's nothing specific there.
Well, I'm not sure that he knows what the steps are, and the steps that we've advocated, namely just going in there and buying the properties, the city that is to say, or if Seaside isn't willing to do that, we advocate an eminent domain process that seems totally appropriate when the neighborhood is essentially at risk.
Right, I don't think we can reasonably suggest that he doesn't know that's your proposal, particularly since he was in the room when you proposed it last meeting.
Well, he disapproves of buying from the Seaside Company under some sort of reasoning that would, in essence, reward them, a logic that I can't follow at all. But, you know, I'm trying to suspend my disbelief and see some sort of shift towards recognition of the problem. It was shocking to me that he seemed fairly unaware that the basic problem in the flats was this Seaside Company destruction of housing.
Well, it seems to me that what Andy Schifrin wants to do is he wants this project, by fair means or foul, for better or for worse, and this is a project that I guess Mercy Housing, with Elizabeth Vogel, involves essentially $3 to $5 million redevelopment of Dolphin and Lee.
Yes, I think one would have to assume closer to the five than the three.
Essentially making the current Dolphin Lee people essentially homeless, even though they say they're going to look for substitute housing, given the economic realities of the rental situation in Santa Cruz, the amount of money that they would get, the cap on the amount of money, and the new cost that would involved in moving into the Dolphin Lee once it was built would mean you would be essentially creating 200 homeless Hispanic people, the same Hispanic people, it's got to be said, it's been said before, but it should be said again, that were most active in standing up against the beach boardwalk giveaway. So in a way, this kind of gets rid of all those troublemakers that were instrumental in essentially ousting the Rotkin Kennedy proxies who lost the last election.
I consider it political retaliation. Mm-hmm. removal of political opposition.
Well, isn't it kind of ironic that SCAN, the group that supposedly stood behind the new Crone Fitzmaurice Sugar majority, and against the old Steinau, Walton, Quartararo, Rotkin old guard, Rotkin doesn't show up at these SCAN meetings anymore. That what they're doing is they're essentially allowing Schifrin to sort of float this proposal and zip it right through with this, with all this sort of colorful camouflage. I mean, that's what all this other stuff looked like to me. And they did add in, oh, we also think the Rex Court proposal, which is the proposal of buying Canfield property, specific Canfield property, and specific and upgrading Canfield housing. I guess it's upgrading Canfield housing that currently exists. Is a good idea, and you know that they said that's a good idea. But again, all of it seems to be again this focus on this preconceived project, which looks like it comes directly from Catherine Byers. Is that correct? Or?
Well, I don't know the source of it. I doubt that it originated with Catherine Byers. I really don't know where it originated, but the rationale for it is that the Dolphin Lea is so substandard that the site was chosen in order to. Amongst other reasons, get rid of this terribly substandard housing, except that the housing is not substandard. The whole allegation is utterly unfounded and is just based on a report presented by the would-be developer, Mercy Housing Charities, and the city has thoroughly inspected these properties and has no problem with them. So given the fact that they're not really getting rid of substandard housing, I have to assume there's some other reason why they've chosen this particular location. And the one that I just cannot dismiss is the idea that these people got in the way of an earlier Mercy Housing Charities project.
What was that?
Well, that was the so-called replacement housing, 28-unit replacement housing over on 3rd Street that was supposed to have been the replacement housing for the people who would have lost their homes for the 3rd Street realignment, which was a part of the boardwalk expansion plan. So these people stand up and say, no, we don't want one end of our neighborhood, which was right next to them at the time, didn't involve their property, but came right up to it. We don't want one end of our neighborhood lopped off and a big heavy street shoved right up against our bedroom windows. And we don't want the amusement park to expand. And these are the people who were a good chunk of that resistance. And then all of a sudden, under this bogus guise of their housing, their current housing being substandard, they are targeted for relocation.
Now,
it's just impossible for me to avoid the conclusion that somebody's trying to get rid of those people because they're in the way of quote-unquote progress.
Well, I know that Elizabeth Vogel at the meeting last night of Mercy Housing said specifically that Catherine Byers, and she also claimed Crone, Fitzmaurice, and Sugar, also approached her and asked her to present a plan. And I know that Jane Bearer, another activist and your partner, I might even say your wife, I'm not sure what
my significant other.
Just what is your relate? Well, we'll get into that later.
Yes.
In any case, she presented at this SCAN Housing Committee meeting lots of letters from the residents in the Dolphin Lea saying, please get your keep your mitts off the property here.
Yes, yes. And they've shown up at public meetings recently at the trailer, earlier when the beach area south of Laurel Plan was there. You know, pretty courageous stuff for a bunch of people with very limited English-speaking ability, low-income people, you know, just working their butts off to pay the rent, not very trustful of politics in general. You know, pretty courageous stuff for them to get up there. With our encouragement, our assurance that in this city, at least, they could trust the political system.
Well, I'll tell you how it looked to me, Phil. I saw the last meeting, and I was so upset by what I saw at the previous SCAN Housing Committee meeting. It looked like Skip Spitzer, who's one of the co-chairs or co-coordinators or co-facilitators, he actually had some better things to say at this current meeting than at the last meeting. But it looks like they're trying to find a way to schmooze to death. They don't want to offend Andy Schifrin. They don't want to offend Bernice Belter. Belton. I always get that wrong.
Belter.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I guess she's sort of a Belter, but Belton. You know, they don't want to offend Bernice, and of course, the only way that you can really deal with this issue is really head-on. I mean, is this, who's benefiting from this project? We asked Don Lane, who seems to be involved in the project and was in the room, but he quickly beat a retreat. We asked Andy Schifrin. We asked, I guess, David Foster, who was with the Mercy Housing that was there. Bernice Belton could have answered. Some of the other people who seem to be kind of, submarine supporters of this project. Who is getting benefit in terms of who gets the jobs, who's going to get the money, who's going to get the profit? Nobody answered that question when I raised it. Do you have any answers to that question?
No, it's a deep, dark secret. Stuff like who would own it, even, you know, that kind of detail. It is very unclear to me, and I, you know, I've just developed such a nasty attitude towards this whole affordable housing thing as it's done in this city through this designated developer, Mercy Housing Charities. I've followed it through La Playa over in our neighborhood where neighbors just got thrown out of their houses. One person's house was suspiciously burned to the ground. Historic resource homes were destroyed in order to build this ugly post-modern monstrosity that is not affordable to the people to whom it was promised, you know, presented as the solution to beach flats housing problems, and then it turns out that no beach flats people qualify. You know, I'm so distrustful of the whole thing that I wish I knew some more of these inner details. I'm just convinced that it's corrupt and funky as shit, really.
Well, you know, what I noticed also is that several people were making the same kind of arguments that I heard for the beach flats, the Third Street realignment, expansion,
commercial,
we've got to do something. We've studied it long enough. We've talked about it long enough. We've got to do something, and so forth. And this kind of line, and my question was, you know, first of all, doesn't this sound a little too familiar to you folks? You, the folks who opposed the beach boardwalk expansion, now you're going to get rolled over by the same crew operating from the inside.
Right.
And then the second thing I asked was, you know, where's the cost-benefit analysis? I mean,
right.
Here we have Jane Baer's proposal, which is the Rex Court proposal, which says you're going to get more housing, current housing will be saved, and yet you'll have still more housing. You'll save money on relocation fees, so you can actually buy property so people can own their own houses instead of having to, you know, having that housing go to Mercy Charity and the Catholic Church, whoever gets it after that period of time. I mean, maybe that's good, maybe that's bad. Sounds good to me, but what's the cost-benefit analysis comparing with the $3 to $5 million that it costs to do the, the Dolphin Lee project? And of course, the response of Bernice Belton was $3 to $5 million isn't much.
Yeah, you know, right. I mean, like she was paying.
But more important, you know, she didn't deal with the issue, nor did anyone in that group, and say, you know, we haven't really got a cost-benefit analysis.
Right.
Why don't we get a cost-benefit analysis, compare the two plans, and then come to some more intelligent, educated decisions? Meaning, maybe Dolphin Lee, in spite of all appearances, is a great idea. If it is, the facts will support it. If it isn't, then we're glad we haven't rushed into it.
Exactly.
But nobody said that. Instead, they were rushing forward with this proposal. And my thought was this. I think that a majority of the people in that room didn't want the Dolphin Lee project. But they were more concerned about their personal relationships with people like Andy Schiffer and Bernice Belton and the people who were pushing this sucker without any answer to these unanswered questions. So they just wanted to kind of merge it into a motion that would enable them to kind of get off the hook.
Right.
And they got off the hook with the motion that said, well, we're not actually just pushing the, you know, Dolphin Lee. We're also asking for this Rex Court, and we're asking for them to look at these other alternatives.
Right.
But the problem with that, I was almost seduced by the idea, well, maybe we can all be friends. You know, the Rodney King, let's all be friends, is a very seductive thing. I mean, if you can be friends, it's great. But you don't want to be friends with people who are trying to eat you up.
Right.
You want to stop the cannibalism first, and then you can talk about being friends. You know, I mean, you learn self-defense tactics, and then you make sure that you're friends. Once you know how to defend yourself, then you can be friends.
Right.
So I guess what I said to you and to Scott, and I guess Jane wasn't out there, but you were the only three who voted against this proposal. I guess David Silva abstained. Everybody else voted in favor of it, to my chagrin.
Me too.
But, you know, that really what you had to do is you had to sharpen the contradiction here. You had to make it real clear that this was some developer's pet project that was tromping all over the rights of people in that area, and that you would raise a hue and a cry and demand that it be essentially returned. Now, I know people tried to do this. but I guess I felt that there
Scott Graham was rather eloquent in that regard.
Well, I thought Scott kind of went off the deep end because he tried to, you know, he was saying, I'm going to filibuster. Well, you know, you don't have to filibuster. You just have to keep asking the question. Please answer the question, Andy Schifrin. Who benefits from this?
Yes.
Please answer the question, where's the cost-benefit analysis? Please answer the question, if there is no Dolphin Lee project, how come it's all together and ready to zip right on through? I mean, you know, it seems that, I mean, Skip Spitzer initially proposed a very strong no Dolphin Lee project unless it is not opposed by anybody in the community there.
Yes.
And he immediately withdrew when I guess the guy who proposed the final motion, what was his name?
Jeff Ringgold.
Jeff Ringgold, or Jeff Ringer, I don't know what we want to call him.
Yeah.
He came in and said, you know, oh well, you know, and then any one person could defeat the entire housing project. We need, the argument I guess that prevailed at the SCAN Housing Committee was that there will be no affordable housing built unless we really push for specific projects. And that has some meaning in some context. I would agree with that as an argument in other circumstances. But unfortunately, it is very clear that this city council does want to build housing that's low income and affordable somewhere. So you don't need to name a specific site unless you are trying covertly or even overtly to get them to choose that site.
Yes.
And that is what the Dolphin Lee people, the Mercy Housing, the Andy Schifrins are trying to do. That's what it looks like to me.
Absolutely. Well, you know, as well as I do, that there's this inner clique of people who we could name in about 30 seconds, it's not that large a group, who exert an enormous influence, and I'm not really sure that the co-chairs of SCAN or even the steering committee of SCAN are really those people. They're pressured by those people when they can go into a situation like that and say, well, we need a housing subcommittee, and then they can jam the housing subcommittee so that they can control votes and direct it towards these specific projects. And then the SCAN steering committee is obligated to consider the recommendation of the subcommittee that has been basically,
you know, the problem with people listening,
overweighted, you know.
The problem with people listening to this is that you and I, you know, are more familiar with these committees, subcommittees, and, you know, God knows what. What the bottom line looks like to me is we have a group, SCAN, Santa Cruz Action Network, which essentially helped to elect the city council. Every city council for the last 20 years has been SCAN endorsed. This last election, we thought there was a change in SCAN because we thought new council members who are coming in to say, don't destroy the Beach Boardwalk neighborhood, don't turn over the town to Charlie Canfield just because he's, you know, throwing out 28 housing units for you somewhere down the road.
Wouldn't pay for it anyway.
Yeah, there you are. You know, we thought we'd come to that, but we have learned that, you know, that the same insiders are still in the same place. We should have known that beforehand, of course. They've never moved. They're sitting there as usual, whether it's the Democrats or the Republicans who get into power.
Right.
It's the same power brokers at the center of the spider web. The question is, how can people fight it? And I was really pleased to see the way you and Jane Baer came up with an alternate plan from the neighborhood, cheaper, seemed to create more housing, seemed to show more respect for community sentiment in the area, and presented it as a positive thing. And I'm going to encourage you to keep pushing that plan and keep, because I think there are a lot of people who, you know, they hear the words affordable housing and they start, you know, running off the cliff like lemmings. I think it's good to have affordable housing, but you don't want affordable housing, as David Silva pointed out at the same meeting, activist David Silva from the Green Party, who says there's a real crisis coming up in about 6 months when everybody's going to be kicked out of their housing.
Yes.
We probably should invite him to call in and discuss that. David, if you're listening, please call in and talk about that for folks. We need more details on that.
Uh-huh.
But I mean, the reality.
Well, and all of these HUD projects that were built in the late 60s, early 70s on a 20-year affordability thing where the 20 years is about to lapse and the owner therefore gains the option of forgetting the affordability thing and selling them or putting them at market rate. A lot of people who are used to receiving subsidized housing may find themselves in a world of hurt there within the next few years.
I mean, that's what SCAN should be talking about. That kind of thing. How does SCAN do countermeasures against that kind of shit? Not pushing and debating and having all kinds of getting its actions consumed with these special interest pet projects from, you know, key developers in the community. I mean, it really enrages me that instead of dealing with, like with the sleeping ban, here's a law that affects all kinds of people. We don't want people. I mean, some people sleeping outside, it's a miserable alternative, but it's what they got right now. Mm-hmm. Don't arrest them. We can't get the scan. Scan for 4 years has said, yeah, don't arrest them. But when it comes to putting any pressure on the candidates, on the council members that they elected, we get, you know, Skip Spitzer and Bernice Belton saying, well, we're glad you've done what you've done, when all Catherine Byers did was lower the fine and keep the basic law, reaffirm that if you cover up with blankets or if you sleep after 11, you're a criminal, buddy. And as a consequence of that, we have beatings of homeless people. We have people being sent to the hospital. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mayor Byers.
Right.
So I throw that one in. I've been talking about that before you came in.
Well, the city is not even close to being as radical as its reputation would have it.
Well,
it's really just like practically every other city in the country. Mm-hmm. It just has got a different label and a lot more self-righteousness.
Well, I know that some of us want to get radical in a certain sense. I mean, I think that there are some vacant buildings in the Seaside Company area that need to be occupied, put to good use, fixed up. I'll write you up a deed. Good. I mean, I think, you know, we've been talking about actions to dramatize the city council while they're wasting their time jawing away or pretending to avoid the issue or secretly moving in the Dolphin Lee project. What we need them to do is to take action on a really taking some of this Canfield property that's sitting around, eyesore, blight, useless, off to the side, and use it for people, or if they won't use it, we'll use it.
Sure.
That's the idea that
to
I think.
To me, it's like a macrocosm or something of what's wrong with Santa Cruz, you know, all this populist, we're all equals, and kind of socialist rhetoric, and then you get down to the bottom of it, and it's like some stinking company town in Appalachia or something, with the Seaside Company paying. They go to the corner grocery store owned by the Seaside Company and get their wages in day-old bread. It's damn near that extreme, except we think that we're, revolutionaries and far more advanced than all of the Libyan people elsewhere.
Yeah, well, Wanda is nodding and smiling at this. Maybe we should have... You want to comment on any of this, Wanda? Or how are you feeling over there?